And we're back. This is the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. Our guest is Professor Harry Glaspick, and he is a professor emeritus, York University. He's written an article in the Socialist Project.ca, July 15, titled, How Employers Have Become Part of a Persecution Campaign. And by the way, Harry Glaspick is the author of his latest book, Law at Work, The Coercion and Co-option of the Working Class. It's published by Between the Lines. Professor Glaspick, are you there?
I'm here.
Good to be talking to you. What a terrific article. I think everybody needs this article because it's a kind of a, I don't know, there's, as you point out in the article, there's a lot of people losing their jobs or being silenced by employers. And the one that is really kind of, I think, struck people more, maybe just because of the nature of the work, but the a paramedic, and I believe she's employed by Vaughan. You can tell me who this person is and what, but here she is, a 15-year career as a paramedic. I think everybody admires paramedics because we've all seen them do the marvelous things and her ready to be brave under terrible conditions and save the lives of the rest of us. And she had a political opinion, which she expressed on her, I believe, on her Facebook page on one day and loses her job, her living, the next. How can that happen in a free society?
Well,
that's, the rest is all up to you.
No, it's actually very easy to understand. There are two things at work, I think, in these things. We forget that employers still have what we call prerogative of management, which is, of course, the prerogative is defined as the power that we give to gods and kings. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that is still true. So I'll start with that, I think, to explain what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Employer, no matter how you are employed in Canada, whether you're employed under a common law contract as an individual, or whether there is some statutory employment, or whether it's by under a collective agreement, no matter how you are employed, the law implies a set of duties which it imposes on the workers. And that is meant to extract as much surplus value out of them as you can. And those duties are every worker is expected to exercise reasonable care and skill. And that, of course, is a question of definition. But the worker is also expected to obey all demands by the employer. You obey first and you grieve later, we say in collective agreements. So the worker is a subjugated person, an inferior person in a superior-inferior relationship. And in respect of the question of how the Israeli Hamas conflict itself out in Canada, the third and fourth duties are the duties which come into play. They're the duties of loyalty and comfort and being acting in good faith. The worker has both of those duties. Now, they mean that the worker cannot in any way upset the employer's reputation, so that the worker is actually controlled outside the workplace as well inside the workplace. What they say outside the workplace may well bring the employer's reputation into disrepute in some way or make cause it to lose business in some way. And if that is so, the worker can be disciplined by the employer. Disciplined, of course, can mean the ultimate penalty, which is being fired, which is what happened in the case I was writing about by the woman Karen, Catherine Grzyk, I think.
Catherine Grzyk, yeah.
Her name is very difficult for me to pronounce, but she was dismissed on the spot. When it was found out she'd said something, as you count that, on her Facebook, that upset not the employer directly, It had nothing to do with the employer. It said upset people who are pro-Israeli in this country. And as being pro-Israeli, they said this was sounded ugly and anti-Semitic. And when the employer was told about it, he didn't know, of course. The employer did not know about this private posting by one of the employees outside working hours. When the employer heard about it, the employer said, "Oh, we might lose our standing and our reputation, and be seen to be not inclusive in our relationships with particularly Jewish people." So they sacked this person on the spot for the duty of breach of loyalty and good faith on that basis. Now, in this case, the employee is better off than most employees. First of all, she's very well situated within her union, which is CUPE. She is on the executive board of that union, so they'll certainly fight for her. And more importantly, she's employed by a government employer. Mm-hmm. She's employed by York Region in the city of Bonn. And York Region, being a government instrumentality, is bound by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Now, private sector employers are not. So the employee, if that had happened in the private sector, and it does from time to time, of course, then there is no Charter of Rights and Freedoms defense possible for the employee.
Yeah, by the way, I'm really glad you emphasize that, because actually what we don't have any more than, say, 30%, if that, of people, of union workers. The majority of workers in the country are absolutely at the mercy of their employer, and they don't have any illusions about freedom of speech.
No, and they shouldn't have. And so what you have in this situation, the employer assumed that saying something anti-Israel, which is what this woman said, she was supporting an anti-war rally that was being conducted by her union, and she said that Israel was committing genocide and murder and killing people. And which is what very important scholars say as well. It is not as if she was saying something unusual, but she said that all these things, and of course, people who support Israel were very upset by that, and they made it known as quickly as possible to the employer that they're one of the employees. It's sort of like telling at school about another pupil, right, another student. They immediately contacted the employer via a city councillor, who then told Stephen De Luca, who used to be a lead the Liberal Party in Ontario and is now the mayor of Vaughan City, and immediately Stephen De Luca informed the employer, and the employer said, "Oh my God, this is terrible." There is no evidence it was terrible, of course, because there is no evidence that any of the paramedics of York Region were going to treat people who they thought were Jewish, if they ever knew they were Jewish, badly, as they picked them up with a heart attack. It's just nonsense on stilts. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, that's the way it went. And the way it goes like that is precisely because Canada, as a nation state and a political entity, has decided to support Israel. Mm-hmm. And thereby it supports any claims by pro-Israeli groups and individuals in our society. So if they make a claim that an anti-Israeli statement is also an anti-Semitic statement, the government of Canada is on side. There is no agreement about this, there is no pronouncement about this, but that's the way it works. It works as if it's by magic.
Yeah, you call it an informal partnership.
An informal partnership. And that informal partnership is cemented in two important ways. One, governments of Canada, various governments, have and the governments throughout the country, not just provincial ones as well as the federal government, have agreed that they will adapt the message of something called the International Holocaust Memorial Alliance. This is a statement put out by Israel as to what they think constitutes protection of Israel and protection against anti-Semitism. And it turns out that quite a number of the things which they call anti-Semitic are just anti-Israel, which is quite a different thing. Anti-Semitism means hatred of Jews per se. Anti-Israel, of course, is just saying another nation state is not behaving well, and which is quite distinct. And so by the adoption of what this is called, that mouthful is called IHRA by everybody, International Holocaust Memorial Alliance, by adopting that, it imbues the whole idea of saying anti-Israel is anti-Semitic, and therefore Jews in Canada are afraid and intimidated because the next step will be the Holocaust that Jewish people suffered. That allows that argument to be made. That works on employers, by employers saying whether or not they're pro-Israel doesn't matter. Employers say, gee, this could give us a bad reputation if the Jewish people say that and they go around saying that we're have employees who are nasty to Israel, therefore we're anti-Semitic, we better get rid of that employee. And they have the power to do so. That's the way it works. Yeah. And it's really nothing written on paper. It's really nothing. It is just a series of assumptions and assertions that feed into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very striking that you mentioned, and I hadn't realized this, there was no debate when they adopted this IHRA definition.
No, it's not a statute. It's not in regulation.
It just did it.
An adoption of a principle.
It just did it.
Yeah.
And by the way, wouldn't that be because they would actually have to deal with the sacred notion that we have freedom of speech, and
yeah.
that and also in disputes you have to have evidence and you have to have something.
It would be if you actually had
substantial.
It's in public. It would be very difficult, because many people would have views about saying that, hey, I want to be able to talk. If I may, the key to this, and one of the keys to these assertions and assumptions, is that people make the assumption that it's possible that anti-Semitism will lead to the Holocaust again. Mm. Now, it's important to remember that here, the anti-Semitism people are complaining of is graffiti on a synagogue or some hassling of people, maybe even shooting at an empty school or something like that, mm-hmm. right? Which is pretty bad. It's not something you want to encourage in your society, but it's all being done. But that's being done by individuals and civil groups who are pro-Palestinian cause, we believe. And so it's done by them. It's not done by the government of Canada. And the key to the Holocaust, of course, is it was done by governments. It was led by the government. Mm-hmm. Here, the opposite is true. Here, the government is pro-Israel, not anti-Israel. So the whole argument is just a very, very peculiar one that doesn't stand on logic. It's just emotional appeals. Mm-hmm. And that works well because Israel, as a state, says it is a Jewish state. It's not a state like Canada, you know. It's not a state even like Saudi Arabia or anything. None of them say I'm a Muslim state or I'm a Christian state or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Israel says it's a Jewish state,
mm-hmm.
and that it stands for all Jews in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So Jewish people in the diaspora, who support Israel, and that's understandable, it's an emotional attachment, and they support Israel, feel that a claim against Israel is a claim against them because they belong to that state. Mm-hmm. And that's another emotional and idiotic tug that they have that makes all these informal arrangements work to the detriment of the working class.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, there was an element here of which is noticeable. You could call vigilantism. They have these There's an individual in Montreal who made it her business to, she and friends, I guess, to kind of stalk people. And I think, by the way, that they're interested in the union CUPE because its leader has been an outspoken person on the issue of Palestine and Gaza.
Yeah.
And they posted, we did it. They got rid of the woman who wears the keffiyeh because of an article of clothing.
That's what happened in this case. So that what you have is that
But these are like vigilantes.
These things are results of sort of postings on social media, something I may say I don't understand. I'm not on social media, so I don't know what people do on it, really. But people follow these things and find them, and then they say, oh, there is an anti-Semite there. And if they didn't react at all, they wouldn't even know there was anti-Semitism. They say there is. It's really rather peculiar. And so they say, oh, yes, we hounded this woman for a day, actually. It was only a day.
Yes.
And she immediately got dismissed. We did it. It's an amazing thing, really. It's quite shocking.
And how about the role where politicians say, oh, I heard this, I looked into it, and they fired them? It's not an elected politician's job to determine whether somebody should be employed. If they start doing that, it's an outrage.
Yes, exactly. I agree. It is a very... but it's one way, but going a bit wider, perhaps, this power to contain what workers do in their own time that the employer has, of course, is the very reason that we have such weak whistleblower laws, because whistleblowers are people who speak in their own time and in fact are intended to hurt the employer. So it breaches the duty of good faith and fidelity. So employers resist that, and so we have very weak laws on that, and we have very little by way of whistleblowing, and therefore a lot of wrongs are carried out by many employers about which workers know, but they cannot talk.
Mark Twain said, Americans know that they have freedom of speech and freedom of conscience, and they have, and then thirdly, they know better than to try to use either.
He was a very wise man. I've seen the same kind of thing. You say you've got freedom of speech as long as nobody's listening.
I know that, so, people have said this about, know your rights. Well, I think ordinary working people, they do know their rights, but they also know that it's dangerous to try to exercise it.
Yes,
it's
not called discipline, yes. When you get in a collective agreement, it's not called discipline for no reason. There is a discipline. A discipline is meant to teach and educate people to behave in a particular way. That's what discipline is for.
Yeah. I knew a man who told me that I said, he was talking about the miners of Kirkland Lake, and I said, boy, they must have been very class conscious when you were trying to organize them. He said, oh, they were. They always took their hat off when a foreman went by. they have to live, right?
My goodness.
Isn't it, by the way, you've talked, of course, your themes are class struggle and the problems of capitalism. And by the way, this is Harry Glasspeak, and the article is How Employers Have Become Part of a Persecution Campaign. Just the achievement of having a union gives you like an 80% rise in your possibilities to exercise, to live like a free human being, doesn't it?
It does. It does, because the union will defend you. If
you're not alone,
free speech or freedom of association or any such thing, or freedom of conscience is injured by your employer, the union will battle for you, and it has claims to make. And what's more, it goes to an arbitration, as it often does. The arbitrator has power to reinstate the employee. That doesn't exist in the private sphere at all, in the sphere where there is no collective agreement. And as you mentioned earlier, in Canada, in the private sector, we're down to about 15% unionization. Overall, we're at about 30% because the public sector is heavily organized. But in the public sector, as you see in this case that we've been talking about, there is a very serious containment of workers by other laws.
Mm. Yeah. You made the rather nice point. I mean, the government has a position on Israel, and the private employers may or may not. It depends. But basically, this is driven by the outlook of the state itself, right? So she chose, as I think your expression was, the wrong war to criticize.
Yes.
She could have criticized. You know, she could have jumped in on the side of bombing somebody, and there would have been no problem.
That's right. Or if she decided to make a speech about pro-Ukrainian people. Nobody would raise an eyebrow.
No, they'd put her on a platform. They could join.
It is a curtailment of free speech and free expression and free beliefs. There's no question of that in my mind. Yeah. And I think she will win her arbitration, by the way, because she will be able to make those arguments. What the employer will undoubtedly argue is that these remarks are seen as anti-Semitic, that therefore its standing is in question because they have an anti-Semitic employee, and that therefore they had a right to discipline. Yeah. I don't believe that will fly in this case, but precisely because it's just not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think she has a good chance. Yeah. But most people don't. Most people don't. And then it works in other ways as well, if I may say, Phil, that in various campuses, various universities have dismissed employees on precisely these grounds. Right? They have just got rid of an employee because they spoke in a way that hurt people. They said, well, people were hurt because they said it was anti-Semitic. And why did they say it was anti-Semitic? Because it was anti-Israel. And
yes,
that's anti-Semitic. And you go through the same line of argument again. And it's all pretty silly. And they've also refused employment to people who had employment yes, opportunities.
We've lost many great scholars who were going to come here, and they said, no, we don't want you.
Yeah.
They just changed. So all of this
is not just a minor issue, right, in terms of freedom of expression, belief,
yeah,
and being democratic.
Yeah.
In addition to that, they're also property owners. All these employers.
Hmm.
So you can't even demonstrate or organize on their premises.
Yeah.
And so they use that as well to steal free speech and the organization. That's particularly odious on university campuses, where the whole idea is that you have large spaces so that people can congregate,
yes,
and have meetings and talk about politics or social issues. That's one of the central features of a university. But they use that power of saying, oh, it's on our premises, you're interfering with our walking or something,
yes,
like
get
that.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, so therefore you're intimidating us. and so on. So you see how tied it is to class.
Yes.
It's based on property rights, and it's based on the employer's prerogative of management rights.
Yeah. Well, I think, thanks to your article and thanks to the courage of that union, more people are going to be talking about Gaza, whether they like it or not. And Professor Glasspiegel, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very, very much.
I'm glad to have this chat. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIUT. Thanks, Pedro. And 33-45-78. It's coming up.